Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, we're going to be talking about letter of intent, how to structure it, what should be on there, what shouldn't be on there. And we're going to be going over a letter of intent that someone sent Jeff that Jeff has been working with. And we're going to kind of critique it a little bit. And then we're going to go into what they offered and kind of what Jeff would have done in that scenario as far as structuring terms on that. You want to talk about it a little bit, Jeff, and kind of some background?
So this lady contacted me. She's a listener of our podcast and is interested in starting to put together creative financing offers. And so she put this together, and I'm not putting this, we're not doing this episode to bash on her in any way. I actually give her a lot of credit. She took a lot of initiative, but there's some things that I think that would be helpful to point out, not only to her, which I already have, but to all of our listeners, both on how to structure the LOI, and second, to just be clear when you're putting together some of these offers, that to not get yourself confused or make it where it's potentially confusing to the seller, because I do this on a regular basis and I was a little confused.
Yeah. After looking at this, it looks like she has so much information up front.
Too much.
Yeah, just right here. So this is kind of page number one. There is some more personal information we're not going to disclose, but just looking at this, in all options presented in this LOI, the following is assumed: buyer will be responsible for the following costs concerning the property to begin 60 days after closing. So it says like monthly note payments to bank, taxes, insurance, utilities, maintenance, repairs. Buyer will send all payments to a third-party escrow. Buyer requests an inspection period of 7 days. There's just so much up front here.
Yeah.
Before there's even an offer.
Exactly. And so first of all, this would not be in... If you want to create your own LOI in your own format, which you're totally... Yeah, you certainly can. I think simple, think simplicity. If you got to the point where it's, you got to think like these are, most of the sellers are, this is brand new to.
And they've never sold a house or
right.
Before, usually.
So, I would immediately be like overwhelmed by this being my first page, because I haven't even gotten to an offer and this is kind of like the setup. To me, this would be after the offers, and I would change some things. First of all, I wouldn't put in parentheses to begin 60 days after closing. That's kind of like, hey, I'm trying to sneak that in, and that needs to be out in the open where the seller can see it. I do that frequently, and sometimes I get it, and sometimes I don't. And I'm willing to negotiate that one way or the other.
Yeah.
So monthly note payments to bank and seller. Well, I don't really know. If that means one note, two notes, I personally don't think you need this. And the taxes, the insurance, I mean, you're going to cover the taxes. You're not covering the insurance in this case because there's an underlying loan. And so you want to be careful. I would actually eliminate insurance in this. And then if it got brought up to me, I would just say, I'm going to have you continue to make your insurance payment. So you know, that payment, the insurance is escrowed in your underlying payment. Yep. That's going to continue to get made. And then me or my buyer will go get a separate insurance policy. So right. I'm not going to say that I'm going to make the insurance payment. Utilities, maintenance, repairs, that's all fine. Buyer will send all payments to a third-party escrow service. That's fine too, but again, this to me should be more in the after the fact of the offers and, you know, kind of giving some more details.
Right.
Here's one thing I don't like. Buyer requests an inspection period of 7 days. Way too short. When you see this is a $400,000 property, 4,000 square foot. I mean, if the goal is for you to go start finding a buyer, and this is kind of in a more rural area, smaller city, and 7 days is not long enough. And this isn't a cash deal where you can just go see it and decide if you know you're going to have a buyer.
Yeah, right.
I would ask for 21 to 30 days due diligence. 7 days is too short.
Yeah. Is this, do you know if this deal kind of falls under like an owner-occupant buyer would be purchasing the property?
I want to go through that. So let's table that question for just a bit.
Okay.
Because I was interested in this for a second, and then I'll show you why I didn't end up doing anything with it. Buyer to verify the accuracy of all information on current bank financing before closing. See, I'm being hit with this already, but I don't even know what she's talking about at this point, right?
Yeah.
There's no offer for me.
No, there's just too much info.
The buyer to put down refundable earnest money. So, this is something that everyone has to decide on in their own way. I don't even put earnest money in my LOI. Now, if I was making a offer on, let's say, a 40-unit apartment building, then I would, because the earnest money is expected. If I'm dealing directly with the seller on a single-family home, I'm going to put earnest money in our purchase agreement. But I'm not necessarily going to put it there, because if you put it there, you're obligated to put it up now, right? And to be honest, probably 95% of the time, we don't even end up putting up the earnest money unless you know the seller absolutely requests it or it's going through a realtor. But putting it here, you're putting it up.
Well, and there's, you know, in my experience talking with a lot of sellers, especially those who haven't sold a house before, is they don't even know what earnest money is.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's earnest money? And yet I've had to explain, you know, many, many times what earnest money is for and the purpose of it. But I would never put it in my offer letter either.
And one of the things that, think about this, if you're wholesaling these properties, typically it's done fairly quickly. Earnest money really wouldn't matter. And if you're asking for 20, 30 days of due diligence, I mean, the earnest money is fully refundable. So rather than send it to the title company before I've even seen the property, and I don't know if she had seen the property already or not, she may or may not have. But I'm not sending the earnest money until I go see it, because now I may have to get the seller to sign off to give back my earnest money, and I'm not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I never do that either.
Okay. All right. So let's look at, we're just going to look at two options here. And it again, I'm super happy with the initiative that she took, but I want to show you a couple of things, and then I want to be clear about one thing. And so what she did, if you're just listening to this, is she put it in like a table, right? And, you know, purchase, down payment, then bank financing, seller financing, interest rate term, monthly payment, balloon payment, then has closing costs, realtor fees, gross amount, and net amount. And again, I think this is too much, because now I'm a little confused about what the actual offer is. So let's go through this for a second. So the purchase price is $415,000, and then the down payment is $20,750, which is 5%. And then it says bank financing, $181,166. And in parentheses, it says current note stays in place, paid by buyer. Okay, so in this case, what you're saying that you're going to do is that you're going to leave this note in place, and you're now going to create a new note for the seller's equity, and you're going to secure that in second position, and make payments on that note with its own terms. So you are not wrapping this deal, this note. And which is fine. You certainly can do that. But I want you to see what some of the potential differences are, just so that you don't get confused, because this would not be a wrap. You know, at the very top, it says trust deed and note. That's correct, because what she's offering is basically, I'm going to buy your property with leaving the existing first, and then we're going to create a new note for your equity, and I'm going to make payments on that as well. The good thing is that when you do that, you're typically going to have more principal pay down, because you know that note's smaller. But I don't normally do it that way. I'd rather just wrap it and create one new note. And I'll show you why in just 1 second. But so what she did is she created a new note, which she calls seller financing, for $213,084. And it's new note paid to seller. And then the interest rate's 5.35%, way too high. No reason to, and I don't care if this was in first position with a wrap, or if it's in second position, you know, just securing the seller's equity, way too high. But why are we offering 5.35%? I can get better than that at the bank. I'm not offering that high of a rate. If you figured this out, so you took the $213,084. That's your present value, 5.35% interest. So she offered it for a 5-year term, 60 months, but it's amortized over 30 years. So amortized over 30 years, Jonathan, what do we enter in for term?
360.
So we're always doing it in months. So the payment comes out to be $1,189.90. She rounded it up to $1,190. Okay? And then if we wanted to figure out our balloon payment, we're just putting in 60 months as N and solving for future value. And we come up to $196,623. So her numbers are correct. So the first thing that I want to look at here is, all right, the underlying monthly payment on this, on the first loan, the 181, is $1,262 a month, PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. Now we're going to add this amount of $1,190 to it. So now we're paying $2,450 total. And most likely we're also going to get our own insurance policy. So we're probably going to be paying about $2,500 a month. Now, if our exit strategy is to sell this property to, let's say, an owner occupant. Let's just think about this for a second. So what I was told is the ARV is 415. Okay. She's offering 415. Mostly because I think she listened to one of our previous episodes when we interviewed Dave Kenny. And I think Dave had mentioned that he feels like you can charge 10% over and above market value. And I would say sometimes you can, but I would not go into every deal. This is a newer home, and I'll go through the details of what this is in a second. But I wouldn't go into every deal thinking I'm going to get 10% above market value. We've talked about condition. That's going to certainly have something to do with it. And this is a huge house in a more smaller city, rural area. It's probably one of the more expensive houses in the area. So I don't really want to be dealing with, hey, I'm asking, $40,000 more than truly what the value is. And if I'm only doing like a 3 or 5 year balloon, it's possible that these numbers don't really kind of, it doesn't have enough time to get back to where the true value is if there's not a lot of, some appreciation over that time.
Right.
Okay. So that's the first thing is that, let's think about this for a second. So let's say that we end up selling this property for $430,000. Okay. And someone puts down $35,000. So they're going to finance $395,000. Let's say that at a 4% interest rate over 30 years, their payment would be $1,885. And taxes on this property, I don't remember what they are. Let's see if there was anywhere I saw it. I think they're less than $200 a month. So do you see that if you're just going and getting normal financing, you're saving a whole bunch of money? Now, yes, I realize that we're offering creative financing. We're offering it to buyers that can't qualify for loans or can't get 4% interest. But even at 5% interest, the payment's $2,120. If you had $200 more, you're at $2,320. Your payment's too high for even an owner occupant. I mean, now you're going to start getting into the 5.5%. 5.5 probably doesn't even get it there. 6% will get it there, but do we really want to go into this paying full market value, hoping to sell to an owner-occupant in an area that's smaller, more rural, which would be, this is a 7-bedroom, 4-bath home. Not everyone needs a 7-bed, 4-bath home, right?
Right.
And we've structured it in such a way that we have to get a premium price and a premium
payment,
right?
Yeah. Okay. The affordability goes down. And if it's in a rural area at that price point, I think it would be a hard sell anyway.
Yeah.
If you just put it on the market and fully fixed up, it would be at a higher, those higher price points in a rural area, there's a great chance that it could sit on the market for a long time.
Well, let's talk about what it is so that you have an idea. Okay. So it's 4,342 square feet, 7-bed, 4-bath, 2-car garage on 1 acre, and it was built in 2014, so it's only 5 years old.
Okay.
It has a mother-in-law apartment. It's in excellent condition, what they claim.
Okay.
It has been used as kind of a rental for some relatives, and the seller claimed that the house could rent for $1,950 if you rent the whole thing as one, or as much as $2,750 a month if you rent it separately, up and down.
Okay.
The ARV was supposedly $415,000. They want $375,000, and they owe like $181,000 and some change with a 1,262-month payment. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So immediately, I don't want to try to sell this to an owner-occupant. That's my last resort. Because, hey, how many people truly need a 7-bed, 4-bath, kind of home, right? It becomes a little, my buyer pool is shrinking.
Yeah.
However, I immediately thought, it's a mother-in-law. You probably are getting like a 4-bed, 2-bath, and a 3-bed, 2-bath, maybe up and down. Mm-hmm. Now, this might have some value.
As a rental?
Kind correct. Of as out. A rental.
Yeah, like a
complex. However, here's where I lost interest. It does have a full in-law apartment, kitchen, everything, but it does not have a separate entrance. That it's a shared entrance, and you know, that worked when it was all family, but probably not going to work very well if it's two unrelated parties. And so that's why I ended up passing on this, but I want to work through the rest of this LOI, and then we'll look at the second option. I just want to critique that. So first of all, she put the closing costs, which were, she estimated to be $6,225. I can promise you it's not that much.
Yeah.
So unless you truly have a pretty good idea of what they're going to be, don't put that in.
No, and well, you can even include it anyway. Then it's more confusing.
Yeah. So, and then here's where I got really confused. So if you've listened to our podcast before, you know that I like to put how much the seller will net or gross, depending on if they have an underlying mortgage. Well, she actually figured out, I believe, what the seller would net in terms of all their equity and their monthly payments and interest and gross. Well, I think that's overkill. Personally, I wouldn't spend the time to try to figure out what they net. I don't care. I just want to show them that they're making a lot more money on this property than what they're trying to sell it for. Mm-hmm. And now I'm confused again. So the gross amount, $521,064, and then net amount, $282,542. If I'm not a sophisticated seller, I don't know what she's referring to.
Either of those numbers, yeah.
Right, yeah. And then the rest of the option one says, seller will be responsible for paying all closing costs. I would not suggest that.
Yeah, especially if they see, if you put the closing costs here as $6,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're only getting $20,000 down.
I realize that, you know, most wholesale deals, the buyer pays all closing costs, at least most cash deals.
Right.
What I like to do on owner financing is I usually like to do customary closing costs. So the seller's going to pay their share of, you know, they're going to pay an owner's title policy, and they're going to pay their fair share of the title expense, and the buyer's going to pay their fair share. The lower the down payment, the less money they're getting, the less I can really even do that. Because keep in mind, that's the money they're going to need to use to pay those closing costs. The less I'm offering them, the less they've got to work with. But I'm never going to ask really the seller to pay for all the closing costs. I can't think of a time where I've done that.
Yeah. Seller's going to ask you to pay for all the closing costs.
Right. It? Okay, then it says title will transfer to the buyer at time of closing. That's totally fine, but again, what does that mean? Yeah, if you're brand new to this, I'd like to know a little more about what that may mean. I'm a little confused, and if I'm someone that hey, you know, I bought two houses in my lifetime, and buyers come, they make an offer. You know, I've only used a realtor before. You know, I want to be clear on what's going on here.
Yeah.
Seller will receive the down payment amount at closing. Okay, that's fine. A new note, like a mortgage, will be created to be paid by the buyer through a third-party escrow service that will cover both the debt to the bank and the seller's equity. What do you think, Jonathan?
It doesn't even need to be in there.
Yeah.
And it, especially the like a mortgage part, they're like, yeah. Well, is it a mortgage? Is what's a note anyway?
Right.
Yeah. In any, you know, anyone that's not even savvy when it comes to selling a house or they've never done it before, they don't, you know, they don't toss around terms like a note very often, you know? Right. So just even adding that word note in there, like what's a note?
Yes. At the end of the term, 5 years, the remaining balance due to the bank and the seller will be paid in full as a balloon payment. Okay. That's fine. All right. Now let's look at the second offer, and we won't need to go through this as much as that first one. But so keep in mind, we offered 415. We created a new note for the equity at 5.35% for 5 years, and we offered $20,750 down. Now we're offering $400,000, $20,000 down. Again, new note to seller. This time the interest rate's 2.5% and it's still amortized over 30 years. And the term is for 3 years. Monthly payment is a little less. And then a balloon payment. And then again, the closing costs and gross amount, net amount. What do you see here, Jonathan?
Why would you ever pick that offer over the first one?
Only because it's a shorter term, right?
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
I agree. And there's not a big enough difference between the two offers.
Yeah, 15,000. There's no bump in down payment.
No bump in down payment. The purchase price is, you know, it would be okay to have a second offer where, if I want the seller to carry for longer, you know, I would probably offer a higher price, and maybe a little higher down payment.
That part makes sense.
Yeah, maybe a little higher monthly payment, maybe a little higher interest rate. You've got to give a reason why.
Yeah, an incentive.
That they should hold the property longer.
Yeah.
And in this case, I would say she did, because I don't like this 3-year offer. Now, if you keep in mind, I think what she was trying to do was more of the simple interest, like something like I do, which you know, I've told you over and over again that
it's not amortized.
Well, and I didn't want to kind of bring that out because I thought it would just confuse people.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the reason I believe that is she decided to use 2.5%, but it's amortized over 30 years. One, you could go 3 years and get 2.5%, or you can go 5 years and get 5.35%. Which would you prefer?
The higher interest.
Well, yeah, right?
Yeah.
The payment's significantly different, $778. Compared to $1,190.
Yeah.
So she is giving reason why to take that 5 year, but you're really not giving me any reason to take this 3 year other than it's 3 year.
Right. Yeah.
So let me, what I wanted to do is look at this a little different way, and we can do this super quickly so we can wrap this up.
Okay.
So first of all, I wouldn't go into this offering 415. If I believe the 415 was the
ARV.
The ARV, but she said she would take 375, I'd be offering 380, 383, something like that.
Yeah.
Still under market value. Why am I offering, you know, $40,000 more.
Yeah.
For this deal, and 5.35%, not a chance. So I would probably go in at 385, and let's say I would offer her, you know, anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000 down on one offer. Mm-hmm. And let's say I'd offer 385, so 10,000 more than she's asking. $18,000 down, and let's just figure out these numbers. So 385 minus 18,000. So I'm asking that her to finance 367. That's our present value.
67 present value. Okay.
Let's do my simple interest, 2.5% for 3 years. 36 months is N. And now I'm going to figure out what I want my monthly payment to be. So she's paying out, what did we say, 1262. Let's say that we could have rented this for 2750 a month, right? As two separate dwellings. And so if we did that and we did what we've always done, Jonathan, where we work backwards with all our expenses, right? So let's say taxes are, we don't even have to worry about taxes because they're already escrowed in her payment. So let's say insurance, I don't know, $60. Maybe we'll end up paying water, sewer, garbage, let's say 200. So let's say that we're left with $2,500 income. Yeah, what would be a sensible payment? I think that if we offered her $1,800 a month, she's making, you know, $3,550 a month cash flow, plus being reimbursed the insurance. So, you know, she's probably making $750 a month cash flow on this house. That's more than she was making renting it. She was renting it for $1,950. If we're offering her $1,800, she had to still pay the taxes and insurance before. We're offering her more than she was getting while she was renting it.
Right.
So let's take $1,800 because $1,800 leaves us a good cash flow.
Okay.
And we're going to enter it in as a negative into our calculator for payment. And then we're going to solve for future value. And now we're going to come up with $323,333 is our balloon. I like that deal.
Yeah.
Way better. There's one note. We're wrapping it, right? We've created a good cash flow to the seller. What if she came back and said, I need more money down? How much money do you need? 25? Okay. That would still work. We could go sell this to a landlord for $40,000-$45,000 down. That's like 10%. They would be putting at least 20 to buy a rental property. They should be making $700 a month. So 700 times 12, 8,400 divided by 45,000. Remember, this house is new, so there's probably not much deferred maintenance at all.
Right.
It'd be at almost a 19% cash on cash return.
Yeah.
Now at least I got a shot to sell this property, in this area, as long as, hey, there's people that need these kinds of rentals.
Yeah.
So
your, what was your future value again? It was
328,333. So how I got that, I took my 385 purchase price.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I minused our down payment that we were going to offer, 18,000. Yeah.
That was 367.
367 is our present value. 2.5% interest, 36-month term. Oh.
Six-month payment was...
Payment was $1,800 negative.
Negative, yep.
Yep, 328,333.
Okay.
And so now, if this property is worth 415, and we're only doing a 3-year term, our seller or our buyer will have to go get a new loan in 3 years, right? New loan or sell this property. Well, if the property is truly worth 415 and it stays worth at least 415 for 3 years, 80% of that is 332. Mm-hmm. So they shouldn't have to put in any more money to be able to refinance and get a conventional loan.
Right.
I like this offer way better. Where would they be in this 3-year deal? So they would owe $183,258 on one balloon. And then, you know, I'm not sure where they would be, let's say, I don't know, 78.
Excuse me.
So they'd be at like 350 to 361, which is not going to be enough to refinance. They're going to have to come with more money to get this property refinanced. So there's no cash flow. If you have no chance of selling this to a landlord.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever buys it's going to have to come with more money when they refinance it. It's going to be tough to sell to an owner-occupant. Would I have a better chance of selling it to an owner-occupant? Mm. I mean, worst case scenario, what if I just wholesale this to an owner-occupant at $1,800 a month? I mean, that's super good payment on a $400,000 property. Maybe I don't stay in the middle, or I don't make, I don't pass on any cash flow. I just deal with it, wholesale it to an owner-occupant. So I've given myself more options than, she kind of put herself in this box, and I don't really see what the option would have been. Owner-occupant's always my last resort, and the payment was still too high for an owner-occupant.
Yeah. So lesson of the story is don't offer more than you absolutely have to, and you only want to offer just enough to kind of incentivize them taking a term offer.
Yeah, well, and again, go back and listen to numerous times where, when we have this spread that you and I worked through, worked backwards. We took what the potential rents would be, and then we just minused out all the expenses, and we knew how much money we had to work with. All right, how are we going to divvy this up? What are we going to offer to the seller, and what can we leave for our potential buyer as cash flow?
Right.
And if we can't offer enough money to our buyer's cash flow, guess what? Doesn't work as a rental.
Correct. Cool.
Might have been a little complicated, but really what I wanted to point out is that you've got to be clear when you're putting together offers. Am I wrapping it? Am I creating a new note, wrapping around an existing note for one payment? That one payment goes to the seller, then the underlying loan gets paid, and whatever's left is the seller's proceeds, whether it's through a third-party escrow or not, and I would always recommend that it is if there's a underlying loan.
Right.
Or am I trying to create two loans, one where the existing loan is going to stay in place and the seller's equity is going to be treated separately? Totally fine situation. You certainly can use that strategy, but know that I've got to add both my payments together, and those payments have got to work.
Yeah. And the interest rate, don't offer what banks are, what you can get cheaper at banks,
Well, it's really interesting. I probably should have asked her, why'd you choose 2.5 on one and 5.35 on another?
Yeah.
Because there's a big difference between the two, and there's a big difference on payments between the two. and it's really not necessary.
Right
there defeated the purpose, you know, at offering too much and offering too high of a payment kind of defeated the purpose on this one.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, cool, guys. I hope that you've gained some kind of value out of this. We went over a ton of information, kind of do's and don'ts. Just remember, with letters of intent, to keep it simple, you're mainly just highlighting your offers, and you don't want to give too much information up front, like closing costs. You don't need that up front. And there's just so much packed into this letter that would be overwhelming to someone who's never sold a house before. Maybe they've done it once and it was 20 years ago or something like that. So just keep it simple. And then don't offer more than you have to with either interest rate, down payment, purchase price, whatever, right? Don't offer more than you have to.
Well, especially when she's asking 375.
Yeah.
Immediately I would say, okay, 375, I'll give you a little more than 375. I'll give you 380.
Yeah.
I'll give you 382. But I'm not going to say, all right, if I'm giving you 415, it's because I'm offering you like principal only. And you're not going to make any more money on this deal other than the purchase price that we're offering.
Right. Yep. Cool.
One of the other things quickly, Jonathan, is that we've talked about the LOI, and all of a sudden in the last maybe 2 weeks, I've had like 3-4 people request me to send them an LOI, an example of my LOI. And I've told them all, I don't need to send it to you. All you need to do is request that video that we did, that I did, you know, putting together offers, you know, from start to finish. It's free. All you got to do is request it. You'll see a copy of the LOI. That's the easiest, quickest way you can get access to it. And, you know, it's free. I don't want anything for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was just about to bring it up. So to get that video, to get access to that video, just text Creative Financing to our hotline number, which is 877-409-8090. Again, text Creative Financing to our hotline number and it'll send you the link. And that number is 877-409-8090 to get access to that. And you'll see Jeff's letter of intent in there. And he walks you through his offer process from start to finish. So it's really good video. So go get that if you haven't already. And then if you have any comments, questions, or if you've done a deal out there using Creative Financing, we'd love to hear from you. And again, you can just leave us a message on our hotline, 877-409-8090. You can also, if you're interested in Jeff's apprenticeship programs, you can also leave a message there and just let us know that you're interested in his apprentice programs, and he'll get back with you directly. You can find us on Facebook at the Creative Financing Podcast, our YouTube channel is the Creative Financing Show, which I know I haven't added videos to it yet, but we're kind of building up a library of videos that will be going on there. So any last words, Jeff?
It's December. We're getting toward the end of the year. I would tell you the same thing that I tell my team, my apprentices, people that, you know, we do meetups with. Time's now. Stop wasting time. Create some initiative. I think this woman did a great job of jumping in and trying to make something happen. And that's how you learn.
And we should give her a shout out. Yeah. So thank you, whoever sent that in. I don't know if you want to use her name, but
I probably should have asked her first, but yeah. I didn't. I love when people take initiative.
Yeah. And you know, that's the best way to learn, you know, by running through that LOI and putting those numbers together. She's gaining far more experience than just listening to it, listening to our podcast. She's actually taking action on it, which is great. So Yeah, we got to congratulate her for that for sure. And like we're all still learning, right? I mean, I definitely know I am. So it's, you know, just, it's something that we continuously do.
Absolutely. And like I said, this wasn't, I wasn't trying to bash her. I think that what she did was outstanding, but hey, let's tweak a few things to make it a little bit easier. And hopefully the knowledge she'll get from going through this will make a huge difference for her.
Right.
Yep. One of the other things I would tell you is that, so I've had so many people, especially recently, talk about how much they've liked this show, how much it's been really good for them. If it's been good, give us a review and a rating. I know some of you have recently. We will in the next 2 weeks be at over 50,000 downloads. Never ever thought that we would get to this point. But now I want to do something with it. And, you know, our goal for 2020 is to triple that. And, so help us, respond to us, tell us what you want to hear, what kinds of stuff you like, what you may not like, rate and review us and share us, help us get the word out. And, if you have questions, call us. We'll help you.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that, Jeff. I don't think we mentioned that enough. We should be doing that on every episode. But, yeah, we greatly appreciate your guys' ear and your attention. And please pass it on. If you feel that it's valuable information, pass it on to somebody.
We've gotten a few new reviews, and I appreciate it. And they've been super nice. Obviously, we want to provide good content, and I think that we provide excellent content. Probably not anything very similar out there in the podcast world with what we do.
Yeah,
And
as our format.
We want to continue to do that. We want to help impact people's lives. So help us. Help us help you.
Yeah, right. Okay, guys. Until next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.